morning, and thank you all for coming. And I wanted to let those of you know that are sitting over here, as this is a panel, we're going to stay here instead of bopping up to the podium. So we won't be able to see you. But again, reminder, if you do have questions, please use the microphone that's over here. We do have statistics that we are going to show you when we get to the end of our presentation. So maybe that might answer some of your questions as well. But again, if you do have questions, please feel free to ask.
Good morning. I just want to tell you a little bit about Pima Community College first off. We have a few students, as you can see. We're in Tucson, Arizona. We have six campuses spread out across the city. We have one central help desk with about six people manning it. And coming on here real soon, we're going to have 8,000 adult ed non-credit students who will have portal access and email addresses on top of the approximately 30,000 a semester.
And hi, good morning. I'm Mary. So ASU is the largest university in the nation right now. We flip-flop between OSU and ASU. So I'm proud to be the director of the help desk services, which is totally outsourced to our partner, Perceptus.
Okay. Some of our motivators for actually going to Perceptus and doing a collaboration with them, before the portal implementation, the help desk supported mainly faculty, staff, and administrators. Six people was enough to get by. Once the portal implementation occurred, we had approximately 3 years worth of student body to support approximately 240,000 students all at once. Now, this was supporting email, this was supporting Blackboard, WebCT. We had limited support hours, and as I said, we had six people who were manning the phones. First 4 weeks of every semester, all we did was answer phones. The six people included the field techs and the director of client services. So we got nothing done but answering the phones. There was also, in addition, approximately 100 emails a day. We couldn't get off the phones long enough to answer the email. We had to do it after hours. So there was also overtime involved and some very tired people. Your turn.
Okay, back one slide back. So why ASU went to an outsourced help desk was we wanted to drive the end-to-end service management, and that's what they do. They take ownership of every call, every email, every chat, every web submission, and follow through. As soon as it goes to tier two, which is ASU, there's a follow through from that also. We want to create raving fans at ASU, and we were just 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, and so with this collaboration, it's 24/7 every day of the year. And also allows us to bring on other units at ASU, and you'll see throughout the slides that it's not just the IT help desk that Perceptus takes, it's a lot more than just IT.
So getting in there, we had to review what actually was working for us, and that is that we had an outstanding help desk. We had the folks that knew, they had the historical knowledge, they knew what to do, what actions to take, and how to proceed through the handling of any sort of ticket that came through. What wasn't working, we didn't have enough staff to actually handle all those phone calls, and we didn't have evening and weekend support. As we implemented a portal, you can imagine, we have students, and students typically want to work not during regular business day hours from 8 to 5. They like weekends, and they do evenings and late at night. We had no way to support that, and we were not going to have a way to support that. So those were issues that we needed to address. You know, Monday morning, help desk would check what kind of phone messages were left over the weekend. A lot of guilt trips thrown on us because we weren't there at 7 o'clock on Sunday night to help them with a password that they forgot so that they had to take that exam by 9 p.m. and now they're going to fail the class. And of course, it was our fault. So by going to an outsourced partner, they were able to take those calls and take the guilt trip off of us. So that was kind of handy. And then find out what are those gap pieces that might be missing. What do we need to do to bridge over our daytime calls and our nighttime calls? So part of that was gathering the information. And again, we had great help desk people who had historical knowledge. But what they didn't have was a lot of written documentation. And in other areas, for instance, our Blackboard support was a completely different department, a completely different campus. They had that knowledge that we didn't have. So we had to gather all those other pieces in order to find out how to create the knowledge base articles for a partner to work with so that they could adequately then support our students and our faculty as well. The technical considerations. So how do we let these folks come in and use our resources? How do they manage and get in and have the security and the access they need to get into Banner is what we use, and to get into other administrative tools to be able to handle all of our calls. And again, the training and documentation. How do we gather those pieces together and ensure that we are actually giving the total picture so that they can actually pick up the pieces for us and carry forward?
ASU had the same issues as Pima, along with we didn't know what the help desk was doing on campus. We didn't have any matrix. We didn't know numbers. And that's the assessment was with the outsourced help desk. They could drive matrix to the T. We know exactly what's going on right now. And that's what we wanted. And even cost. We didn't know how much the help desk actually was costing ASU, and now we know. And it is a cost savings.
We had to communicate it to our employees as well. Not that we were going to an outsourced partner, but the fact that we were going to be able to offer 24-hour support, you know, evenings, weekends, including holidays that we never had before. So what we had implemented was a separate telephone number on our portal, as well as a separate email address on our portal. And we did that when the portal went live. It wasn't something we implemented later. So it kind of separated those regular daytime phone calls and email that came into our traditional standard help desk from those that were more related to the portal or student support. So that was a key piece to be able to separate that out and then to let them know that if they called that number or sent email to that address, that they would then be able to have a response much quicker and on the time that they, in a timely fashion for them as well. So we actually then tested out with our partner to see how things were going, what else we needed to smooth out. You know, you just, when you work through those things together, and that's kind of what we did. Again, looking through the types of calls that we thought we had to be able to find out what kind of information that they would need to be able to support it. We didn't have proper documentation. You know, we knew what kind of calls we had, and it was a gut instinct as the kind of issues that we faced, but actually getting some real documentation so we knew how to move forward was truly critical and important for that.
Same thing at ASU. What we didn't want to do was say the help desk is being outsourced to everybody. We just wanted a seamless transition. We did market that it was going 24/7, but not that it was going to be outsourced. And it worked really well. Nobody knew, except when we had to get rid of some people from the current help desk. And that word went around really fast, campus-wide. But then Perceptus did hire some of the ASU help desk staff, and that helped the transition also because of the institutional knowledge went with the outsourced help desk. And that's really important to have, you know, ASU is so large. We have four campuses. So those people went to the outsourced help desk and knew buildings, knew professors, knew classrooms, and knew the ins and outs of ASU, so that really helped.
Now, some of the institutional knowledge transfer, we had a lot of communication with Perceptus, a lot of training. a lot of site visits, a lot of conference calls. One of the more interesting aspects was actually getting the Perceptus employees access to our systems. This was something that had never been done before. So we had to get them to sign our acceptable use agreements, to agree to all of our policies, and then we had to grant them security clearance to our IDM, to our MyPIMA portal, and to specific parts of Banner. That proved to be an interesting process.
Our implementation was 3 months, so it was really, really fast. Perceptus came on site for a month, sat with the help desk staff, learned what they did. That was kind of uncomfortable, but everybody knew in the help desk what was happening, so we were all cooperative and not really happy, but, you know, in the end, after 2.5 years, it has worked out really well.
Now, some of the things that we had to do, of course, as mentioned earlier, we had to document our own processes. That had never been done before. We worked off institutional knowledge. We all knew what we were doing. We all did it the same way. And if anybody new came on board, we showed them how to do it. Now, that wasn't feasible when dealing with a company like Perceptus. They're a little too large for that. So we documented our own processes, gave them to Perceptus. Perceptus wrote up their scripts for their call center to use, brought their scripts back down to us for us to review, and we approved them. Now, we relied heavily on Perceptus when it came to the SLAs. Perceptus needed SLAs in place. We previously hadn't really had any. We kept up with the work as it came in, and we never really had any complaints, so we never really needed any SLAs. So Perceptus helped us to develop SLAs. Mainly at the time, we were just really overwhelmed with the amount of work that we had, and we needed any assistance we could get from them.
And writing that documentation, we used subject matter experts on campus. We brought them in. They sat with the help desk folks and just on all levels of every subject. I just brought in from the network guys, from the email team, from even through financial aid, through admissions, through the graduate college. I brought all those people in to do some documentation with Perceptus.
So then it was developing our communication plan. How were we going to work through our day-to-day as well as, you know, after they sat and saw our operation, after we documented things and we went through those knowledge base articles, how do we continue on this process? So that became the issue where regular tickets, and when they would have a ticket, they would just send us an email. That's how we worked. We were a Track-It shop, they're a Remedy shop. So those systems don't exactly talk that easily to each other. The easiest method for us was to send it to our regular help desk so that we could then respond. We also used some chat sessions with them so that we could address whatever need it was immediately, or a phone call. We had daily reports so that we had an idea of what kind of issues that they were facing. You know, is it typical, the standard that we had already seen the issues that came through, or were there some things that were different? And that would then mean, do we need to work on some of our terminology? Are we saying the same things? Are we using the words to mean the same thing? Is a PIN reset the same as a password reset? And how do we get that terminology shared between both of our groups so that we knew exactly how to address the issue that was coming forward?
Same issues as PIMA, along with Perceptus used Remedy. We use PeopleSoft CRM. So with the agreement, we had Perceptus move to PeopleSoft CRM, learn it. We were the trainers to them to use CRM. So we had the same reporting mechanism, same metrics, and it's worked out really well.
So again, as we got started through this, we did have campfire chats when we went live with them. Actually, what I did was I sent one of my top help desk personnel up to the Perceptus and sat with them. So they actually had come to our area. They sat with us and watched how we did our operations. And then as we were going live with this, because when we started off, we kept the regular support ourselves. So we kept that extra phone number and those extra email addresses. So those came into us for the regular business hours. They had just when we first started, they only were the evening weekend support. So what I did was then send my staff up there to do actual hands-on training with them, monitor them, and then for the first few days that we went live, he was there on site with them so that he could actually monitor their activities and address anything immediately if they had a question about how to go about this. We also used the chats so that they could actually get to our staff in the daytime as well if they had any sort of questions about this. Again, how to use our tools, that was the training. Here's what we use to manage our systems and how then we train them to actually use those tools adequately. And then identifying those, again, common issues so that one thing for us, again, we knew historically what we thought were the top calls. And then what they had listed down as what were the top calls, it helped us then go back and look, is our documentation online, is our frequently asked question list, are we addressing this so that people actually understand and can do more of their own self-help? So kind of work together to develop better tools.
Okay, some of the issues we faced at startup. We had minor issues with greetings, consistency between the way we answered the phone and the way Perceptus answered the phone. There was also some issues with troubleshooting. We had slightly different ways of doing things, even though there was a strong collaboration. It took a little bit more work to get things together. As mentioned before, we had the two different ticketing systems. So there was some issues transferring work from the Perceptus help desk to the Pima help desk. And there was also some confusion about when to transfer calls, when to escalate tickets, and basically who owns the problem. Who is it that is going to follow up with the user at the end when everything is resolved?
And that would be Perceptus. If it goes to tier two, which is ASU, we would follow up with the customer. But there's that communication between us and Perceptus, and I use the word us, which is not in my vocabulary, so because it's we. But it is a partnership where they know where tier two calls go to. They make sure that tier two is answering them in RSLA, and we're watching their SLA also. So it's back and forth, and we're keeping an eye on each other.
So some of the resolutions to making this partnership even stronger is we have ticket reviews. So I meet on a regular basis with one of their staff, and we kind of go over some of the issues that have been that have occurred over the previous week to see where we might need to strengthen our terminology or how it was addressed. The same thing with the calibration sessions. I get a sampling of phone calls that have occurred over the previous week. So we have, one, the actual phone conversation, and two, how the agent actually filled out their work order ticket on how it was resolved. So I review it. I also have my staff review it for content. But we have a whole list of criteria that we look over when we review those calls. So was the tone of voice, you know, did they answer with the right script? Did they say, you use their name and all those pieces that are that customer service support. So we look for both things. One, the technical piece, that did they follow the knowledge bases correctly, as well as were they personable and did they handle the call on the other end for that person properly, respectfully. So we review those on a regular basis, follow up with them. They document our conversations so that we all know we're on the same page, that we agree to the content of our own discussions as well. Then again, if there is anything, if we notice anything, then they follow up with their agents for that additional training that they might need. And of course, as systems change and evolve, there's ongoing updates to our knowledge base articles.
And what happens with the knowledge base, Perceptus has an internal knowledge base, and it's a pretty much of a script. If the customer says this, do this, or if he or she wants this, do this. It's not like our help center where it's FAQs, procedural issues, policies. So we're always looking in their internal knowledge base, and everybody has access to it. So the subject matter, the SMEs are always looking in there, making sure that the knowledge base is correct. If it's wrong, they change it. And I want to talk about the calibration sessions. They're really cool. We meet once a week, and 2 years ago it was a 10-point scale. It is now a 100-point scale. And what happens is I'm there every week, and I bring somebody else in with me every week different. And so they get a chance to listen, to read the chats, and bring in their issues. No, I think they should be answering it this way. No, the knowledge base is wrong. And it's a real good learning experience for both of us.
Some of the benefits we've realized since we've gone into partnership with Perceptus, we get some really detailed metrics now. We get a lot of really rich reports, and we've got the 24/7, 365 support, which is something that we couldn't even come close to before. And the nice thing is Perceptus has the ability to assign extra staff during peak times. As you'll see in one of the graphs later on, our call volume will shift dramatically during peak times. And this has allowed us to get back to what we like to do, what we wanted to do, what we were good at doing, which is supporting our faculty, our staff, and our administrators. Previously, when we were handling the peak call volume, all we did was answer the phones. At the end of the four-week period, when the calls finally settled down a little bit, we would have 60, 80 open trouble tickets that we had to address between two field technicians. So that was a lot of fun.
So some of the lessons learned, identify your stakeholders early. Who are those? Those are your employees, your faculty, your adjunct faculty, your students, and all of your staff, so that they understand what the total picture is, and that you know that when you're addressing those needs, that you're addressing all of those issues that they find are most important. And have your implementation plan ready. You know, what is your process? What is your time frame to do this? Mary had 3 months. I think we had about 6 weeks before we went live. We actually implemented a piece of it, and we signed our contract midway. We went live with them on August the 8th. So it was a quick process, but we got through it. Yay. So again, I'll allow ample time for transition. And our goal, too, was to get this online before we knew the peak period, before the fall registration was going to start, because we knew then that wouldn't be a time to make an easy transition, that we could iron out any of the bugs that might have cropped up or any of those pieces that we hadn't adequately addressed in the interim. Communication is critical. So ongoing phone calls, constantly, whenever you need it, just to know that there is a body on that other end at your vendor that will pick up the phone and can be responsible or responsive to any issues you might have, network issues or calls that aren't being answered correctly, whatever that might be. We actually also have created an escalation process so that if they know there's an issue, I mean, they will identify whether or not we have a system problem probably before we do, because the calls will go to them. So, you know, it's like, is your portal really up? Is your web really up? Or is there a network issue? They will call us so they know who to call in those instances to get that resolved. And that's, again, because of the response people, they will call us then 24 hours a day if there's an issue. We can get on top of that instead of waiting to the next business day to come in and say, well, something's wrong, something's not working correctly. And training, training, training. That's a critical piece. Ongoing, continual training. It's what we pick up from them that maybe we need to tweak and adjust on how we respond. Again, when we have new issues that come on, you know, all of our processes and our change over time. So how do we let them know to update their knowledge base and get additional training? And then you can talk a little more about that.
A little bit about that. We have a back line for all of our technicians to go straight to one of the help desk agents, and they have that queue on their computer saying, oh, there's a technician calling in. So that technician gets answered the next phone call. So it's sort of an immediate response to the technicians if something is wrong. The Preceptus also updates our system health page. System health is what's down, what's up. We have a yellow, green, red light system. If something is down that affects students, it's red. If it's a building down, it's yellow. And hopefully if everything's working, it's green. But the issue with the timeline and detailed project when somebody else wants to come on board, we brought on HR in 2 weeks. They weren't able to answer half of the phone calls, so we were asked, will you answer HR phone calls? That was thousands of phone calls a week, and in 2 weeks we were answering their phone calls. It's not how we want to do it, so we're creating a detailed project to bring on other customers. And financial aid went online in 3 weeks, which we didn't want to really do, but we did that. And more graduate college wants to come on board. Other student services wants to come on board, too. And we're going to have a detailed project line for those. And that's what I suggest.
So if you are thinking of collaborating with a partner, you do your homework. What is the value? What is the cost for the services that you currently have? As mentioned, that we had 6 folks on our help desk. Actually, 2 people were our telephone support. We had 2 field technicians, the director, and we had a desktop management type of person. But when it came to these times, it was sitting on the phone, and that's all we did. So the cost was that we were a month in of being responsive to our regular work. It was just put off for a month. In addition to the fact, we did not have evening and weekend support. And that cost as well, I mean, where you can't just put a dollar sign on it, that cost not being responsive to our students was important. And then the quality of the phone call. So just ensuring that the work that is done and the vendor that you work with has adequate, the agents that they hire to have that quality. Going back through our calibration calls, that gives us that opportunity to ensure that we do have that quality partnership going on. So identify whatever those critical services that you have, any existing problems that you have, get those identified and documented as well, and prioritize your needs. Our needs were a 24/7 help desk that could take that load and take that for the evenings, those weekends, and those holidays that we were never going to be able to have the staff to be able to support those kinds of things. And again, the consistency and support so that everyone was responding in the same way. When they called our help desk, we had that. So we want to make sure that with our partner, again, their agents were responding in the same way and addressing issues in directly the same methods.
And don't be afraid of going back and forth with contract negotiations. We went back and forth and back and forth, creating the SLAs that we wanted, not necessarily what they wanted to do, but what we wanted our customers to have. We have a clear understanding that we have critical, urgent, and standard cases, and we have an SLA that they have to follow, and average speed to answer, average hold time. We have a clear set of understanding that they have to meet those SLAs, or we renegotiate. So where we are now, we've had Preceptus on board now for 2.5 years. We started with 24/7. We've continued to do that. We started with just IT, ASU Help Desk, and we now have, what do we have? We have human resources. There was 10,000 phone calls in July that went to, financial aid. Half of those phone calls were answered. So Preceptus came on board to really just answer be a warm body on the other side of the phone. And they have really done that. We now have, there's a Blackboard support team at Perceptus, 4 dedicated people just answering Blackboard. We've created 9,000 course shells for fall. And then classroom support. ASU has over 300 classrooms, and we have a 5-minute SLA. If a faculty calls in, somebody from classroom support will be in that classroom. So there's a real clear definition of when a faculty member calls in from a class, we have to call on campus to one of our designated spots to have that classroom support person in that classroom in 5 minutes. We do phone, email, chat, and web submission. They do all of those types of instances.
As far as Pima goes, originally all we had was phone and email support. Perceptus brought in a few more options. Voicemail, which we didn't have before. There was no way for students to leave us messages. If our phone lines were full, they got a fast, busy signal. And there was really nothing we could do about that with the phone system that we were on at the time. Emails, as I said before, were all answered after hours. And as you can see, you know, we have quite a few systems that Perceptus supports. And it's worked out pretty well for us. I think now we're going to move on to some of the hard numbers that we hope you find interesting.
So we started in July of 07, and what is that number? 11,000. Today we're taking 30,000 calls or instances a month. And we do general IT, Blackboard level 1 and 2 support. Human resources, classroom support. They actually have the campus switchboard operator on site answering phone calls. The first day of class in fall, she answered 1,400 phone calls. You know, that's usually hello and a transfer to a different department. Those are really quick. And then financial aid, and that was big. That was a 3-day on-site training to get everything you want to know about financial aid. And the average speed to answer, our SLA is under 60 seconds. And we best month was 26 seconds. Worst month was, 64, just over a minute. But our 12-month average is under the SLA. So we're doing pretty good. It's kind of deceiving when the average speed to answer, there's the one person that has to wait 10 minutes. So that average kind of fluctuates. But we try to call that one person back and say, sorry, you had to wait so long. So there is that follow through with that one person that had to wait the 10 minutes. I'm still on. So, and the negative abandonment rate, we want to keep it at 1 or 5%, and we've hit that goal pretty well. It's an SLA that we want to keep, because a negative abandonment rate is anybody that hangs up under a minute. So we've done pretty well at the 5%. Any more for me? One more. First contact resolution, the FCR, that is when a customer calls in and the help desk answers that question. And it's a done deal. It doesn't have to go to tier 2. Our SLA started out at 75%, and we are now over at 90% FCR.
So this kind of gives you what our call volume had been over for the last year. So you see, you can tell when the semester started. Those are those peaks in there. there was no way for us, or would not be a way for us, to then bring in additional personnel to be able to answer those calls. And that's one of the great benefits about our partner, is that they have that flexibility. They know ahead of time, we're hitting into some peak periods, they can call people. They can call them on the fly. You know, they notice when the peaks are starting, and if it gets to be higher, they actually have other folks that they can call in to answer our phone calls or check on our email and be responsive to us. And these are what we have for our average speed answer, which 60 seconds. You can see some. Our best month was 13 seconds. I guarantee you when we were handling it ourselves, there's no way we were going to answer anything in 13 seconds. But the worst was 90 seconds, so someone was on hold for a minute and a half. But our 12-month average is still well below what our SLA. And our negative abandonment rate, on average of 7%, we are at that. Our best month, you can see, was 4%, worst month, 14%. So we're still staying right in with the agreement that we had, that they would be able to respond to and get to those phone calls quickly. And then our first contact resolution, you can see the best month was 100%. So they didn't have to escalate anything to our tier 2 level. They were able to respond to and handle all of those calls. So at a 75% response rate, they maintain and have always been above our agreements. And with that, we have concluded our presentation, but please, if you have any questions, feel free to use the microphone.
I have one. At my institution, our help desk has a heavy walk-in component where students can bring in a computer that's virus ridden or whatever. Did any of you have that? And if so, how did that figure into this process?
Yes. We had a walk-in component also. And what we decided to do was keep that walk-in service. We've created technology studios on each campus, and we want to make it students helping students, so we have really technical savvy students in these technology students managed by a staff. And student, staff, faculty can bring their laptops in. We've seen them bring in their desk side, and they will help them with software issues, virus issues, you know, if they want to have a Word issue, we will help them one-to-one.
Thank you. This has been a wonderful session. A couple of questions. Did you look at other opportunities for this type of outsourcing, another company, for example? I think there's a Presidium, some others that do this. And how did you arrive at Perceptus?
Good question. The question was, how did we arrive at Perceptus? Pima started with Perceptus, and ASU piggybacked on their contract. So we did not have to go out for an RFP. I don't know how you did it.
We did have an RFP with the specifics in it, and that's how we ended up with Perceptus. It was a valued partner. I mean, some of the criteria that we put in, and they met all of our criteria, but one was that it needed to stay within the continental United States, and so that was one of our key pieces, and they were able to assure us. So that was comforting to us. That was one of our key pieces, but we did an RFP.
This question comes from Ame from MHC, and the question is, one of you mentioned using TrackIT as your help desk tracking system, but you suggested that you choose to use email instead of TrackIT to manage your workflow with Perceptus. How come? Does this mean that you are no longer using TrackIT? And if so, how do they pass calls to you?
And that was at Pima Community College. We were a track it. That's what we're using for our help desk. But because it's not just our help desk, but our 6 campuses are also use that same tool to manage their work orders. But they were using a different ticketing system. For our purposes, for them to then send an email to our help desk with whatever that ticket is, and that's what Remedy does. Remedy then creates the ticket. It gets forwarded to our help desk when it has to go to a tier two level. We respond so that the end user gets the result, but also then Perceptus also gets the response as to how that call or that ticket was handled and why it was managed. Does that answer that question? That we maintained with track at our, that because that was our system, theirs was separate, but an email through Remedy to us to be able to track and handle that was great.
One more comment for why we chose Perceptus. Perceptus has two offices. The main office is in Cleveland, and their second office is in Phoenix. That was a real big plus for us. I know all of the agents. I know the management team. I can drive down there anytime I want and walk in and see how the all the phone calls are going. It wasn't really one of the whys why we chose them. We had a fast implementation and we just piggybacked on their contract.
On the first call resolution, I always seem to have a trouble getting my hands around how that's calculated. You mentioned you have 100% or 90% that doesn't have to go to tier two, but what if someone calls in and says, you know, my printer doesn't work? That's obviously a tier two type of thing because Perceptus isn't going to jump in a car and drive down and work on the printer. But how do you formulate, you know, what types of tickets go into that pool where you're calculating the first call resolution?
Okay. Perceptus has wrap-up codes, and there, for ASU, there's like 22 of them. If we can, they could fix a printer problem. So once they get off the phone, they'll pick one of those wrap-up codes, printer issue, and in the call, and that is part of the matrix, and so it doesn't go to tier two. If it's a wrap-up code, it stays at the help desk. If it's a case that goes to tier two, we know of all those cases that go to tier two.
We have the same thing. Anything that gets sent through that Remedy ticketing system to us is an automatic tier two. Everything else we know that they've been able to handle. And you know, there are some things that naturally will come to tier two. They aren't doing our printer setups for us, or there might be a student who has an issue that needs to go to admissions or a financial aid office. And so those, again, would be tier two types of questions.
At ASU, you said that there was an overall cost savings. And what I take from that is the cost savings was really the staff and the IT help desk. Yet you're now also servicing enrollment management areas. Have those areas had to contribute any staff lines, or are you getting any cost savings from those areas?
Good question. No. we have a CIO, Adrian Sanier. If a unit comes on board, he goes, just take it and do our best. We will negotiate the contract again in July. Dependent upon how many, our contract is, it goes between, how many cases can we do? Up to 24,000 cases a month now. If it goes 10% up, 10% down, then we kind of renegotiate something there. We aren't over 24,000 quite yet. The one slide said 30,000. How long do we have? She's telling us. So we take all those on with just take them on.
This question comes from Jonathan. Richard described the process of getting the call center staff access to various systems like Banner and getting them to sign acceptable use policies as interesting. What exactly was that like? Anecdotes are welcome.
We have our own acceptable use so that anyone of our own internal staff who needs access to Banner, for instance, would have to sign this particular agreement with outlining the specific pieces out of Banner that they would need access to. So we have Perceptus sign that same agreement, and it's our same acceptable use agreement for anyone who has access, who has an email account, you know, Active Directory, any of that. It's that same standard a piece of paperwork that we actually have a signature. So our forms are online. If there are any new Perceptus agents, they would actually download that, sign it, because we actually want that signature that gets sent to us. Then we process the account and give them the specific access that they need to be able to respond to any of the issues that they have to handle for us. So it's in our IDM system. It's into our portal system. It's administrative tools to be able to respond to all those. And it's into our Banner system as well.
And because the system works the way it does, because we need that actual signature on the paper, it's interesting because most of the process is still manual. We get the forms in, we create the accounts, we allocate the permissions, and it's done piecemeal. But it's working pretty well.
I know this wasn't toward me, but all of our forms are online. I am the supervisor per se. Every agent is affiliated with ASU. If all access levels come through me, it goes to a data trustee, and then it goes to an account manager. So there's three people that have to sign off online with people that are needing access.
Hello, I beg your pardon if you covered this before I arrived. I think what I'm hearing is that you're actually retaining a staffed help desk on your respective campuses, but you've outsourced the high volume calls to Perceptus. You're shaking your head. No, that's not the case. And also, have you noticed that in closing your IT help desk, is there a increased volume at other service desks around campus?
I didn't hear that second part.
In closing your IT help desk, is there an increased volume at other service desks around campus, registration, admissions, various other places?
Not really, because our original help desk didn't answer those types of questions. And we do not keep a help desk, a central help desk on campus. It's all been sent to Perceptus. Now, there's pockets of little help desk. Law has their own help desk. Engineering has their help desk. And slowly but surely, they'll come to us and say, well, you know, we can allocate those people somewhere else. There's always something more to do.
We still have maintained our central help desk. The issue was that I truly had two people for phones to handle email and the phone support for our entire institution. So we still have that part of it. It's just that we were regular business hours. There was no way we could manage after hours, evenings, and weekends type of support. In addition to the fact, as you saw some of our peak times, we couldn't handle the call volume that came in at that time, especially when we took everyone from the group and set them on phones.
You mentioned earlier that you didn't publicize the outsourcing. I'm sure people know now that you're outsourcing. What was the reaction of the community and also your staff?
We didn't really advertise it. What we did was just say, here's the phone number to call, and here's the email address to access. Some have learned, mostly because it's internal to IT, but because we for us, it's seamless. They answer that they are Pima Community College. They don't answer that they are after-hours support, so that the user does not know that they are not calling someone that's hired and gets paid by Pima Community College. Our staff was relieved to get some of this help because all they did, we weren't getting anything else done. All we did was answer telephones. So it was a huge relief, and Richard was one of those. He might be able to answer that a little better. It was a relief to be able to know that we had a partner to help out with this.
Yeah, it was a big relief. I mean, when you work 8-9 hours a day and you answer 150 phone calls every single day, it gets pretty tiring and it wears you down pretty good. Perceptus was a wonderful thing for the Pima Community College Help Desk. They took a tremendous weight off of our shoulders and helped us in ways that at the time we couldn't even imagine.
we just wanted to make it seamless. It was a little painful because I'm the contact between ASU and Perceptus. I got all the complaints. This agent didn't answer the question right. He was rude. I'm the contact between ASU. So, and you really need to have that so you know what's happening, you know the problems, you can fix the problems, you can go back to that customer and say, okay, we've coached that analyst. We just kind of advertised, you can call anytime now. They love it now because they can call anytime. And after 2.5 years, it's professional. The agents know ASU. They know the knowledge, and it's been fine.
Thank you. I'd like to thank you. One more question. Who does your Tier 2 support?
IT.
IT, like your central IT? You have technicians? Do they do house calls? Do they?
Actually, Tier 2 is anybody on campus. They will call graduate college, admissions, engineering. We have a whole setup of cases can go to anybody.
Thank